Hello, everyone. Welcome. Thanks for coming today. I'm just going to say a quick little introduction to this whole series, and then Robbie's going to take over for this initial one. So I just rejoice that we're all here thinking about this topic and trying to work on our own minds to be a benefit to others. So this is great. So this is the first in a year-long series of workshops on death and dying. We'll be holding them every Saturday, the first Saturday of every month for a year. And so just keep an eye on the calendar to see, and I'll send out a notice if anything changes, but that's the plan for now. So today is just a general overview to sort of get us into this topic, and Robbie will be leading us on that. And then the next session, Geshe-la will be leading. And then there's just a whole host. If you look, you'll see the different topics that we'll be covering and different people, sometimes Geshe-la, sometimes other folks. So real glad everybody's here. Does anybody have any questions about the series before I turn it over to Robbie? No? Great. Okay. Well, thanks for coming. Oh, and we do have folks who are watching online, so they asked if we do any questions. Brian will be passing the mic around so that they can hear them too. Okay. All right. Thanks. Thanks, Robbie.
Testing. Yeah. Oh. Okay. Yeah. You want to try turning it down a little bit? We got it now? Okay. So we're going to start off with a little meditation. Maybe about 20 minutes, since we're all experienced meditators. It's already Saturday afternoon. We've had a fair amount of chaotic activity already today for most of us, I think. But it's great that we're here together this afternoon. Okay, so begin by establishing your posture, starting with a back that is nice and straight, a little bit straighter than you normally sit. Head is straight on your shoulders, not tilted to one side or the other. Maybe just a couple degrees in front of the vertical, but pretty much straight on your shoulders. Eyes either lightly closed or just slightly open. Jaws not clenched, but loosely closed. The tongue is on the back of the gums above the upper teeth. Shoulders are down and a little bit back, so our chest is a little bit open. Upper arms away from our torso. Hands in our lap or on our knees. If in a lap, we put the right hand on the left with the thumbs touching slightly below our navel. And our legs in a posture that we find comfortable. If we're sitting in a chair, we can put a cushion under our feet if we wish to. If we're sitting on a cushion, we're towards the front of the cushion. And our knees are down a little bit. So just take a moment and check your posture. Look for any sources of tension. Identify them now. Don't wait till the middle of the meditation to deal with them. And we begin by taking three deep breaths from the abdomen with the stomach expanding on the in-breath. Our diaphragm is pulled down. Stomach comes out as we breathe in. And then our stomach comes back towards our spine as we exhale. So do three deep breaths like that. And having done that, we allow our breathing to return to its normal pattern. And we begin by setting our motivation. Whatever motivation has brought us to the center this afternoon is fine. If we want to study and think about death, great motivation. Achieve a little bit of personal insight and personal calm, that's great. But as much as possible, let's generate the bodhicitta motivation that we've come together today to think and discuss and contemplate on the subject of death and impermanence so that our mind can move in a direction in which it is of more benefit to all living beings, to ourselves and others. The motivation that being together for the next few minutes will put a positive imprint on our mental continuum that will benefit all living beings. And having set our motivation, We'll now do a simple meditation observing the breath, the normal pattern of the breath moving in and out through our nostrils, just paying attention to that. Everything else that comes up in our mind stream, we set aside. Just the movement of the breath, the physical sensation of the breath in and out through the nostrils. Just pay attention to that for the next few minutes. And now we can end our meditation with a dedication, giving ourselves a little pat on the back, acknowledging that we've done something out of the ordinary. We sat quietly and looked at our minds for 20 minutes in a way that we know will make a positive imprint on our mind stream, in a way that in the future will benefit all living beings. So let's just acknowledge that for a moment. And you can relax your concentration. Okay. Any questions or comments about that type of meditation? Let's see. Patrick, could you get me the board to write on? Would you mind? Thank you. I think we'll need to write a few things. Thank you very much. Okay, so this is the beginning of a series on death and dying. I'd like to find out a little bit why people wanted to come here on a Saturday afternoon to talk about such a gloomy topic. How many people have lost a close person in the last year? Yeah, a lot, okay. How many people are dealing with someone who's in the process of dying or has a serious illness now? Okay. And anyone who wants to volunteer has a serious illness going on now. Yeah. My personal situation is that I'm a practicing physician, so I have a lot of experience dealing with death of people that I don't know well. I've found out in the last 6 months that both my best friend from college and my best friend from medical school both have stage 4 cancer. At age 59, and neither of them is a Buddhist, but they've been very interested in hearing what I have to say about death and dying from a Buddhist point of view, so I've had to kind of look at myself and reach deep and figure out what I think about it, and it's been an interesting process that's still ongoing, because I'm not sure what I think about it. What would people like to get from this series of courses over the whole year? Would anyone like to volunteer? With you? Yeah. Yeah, we need to record these, yeah, for the streamers, yeah.
I had attended a weekend.
The people are sitting at home in their pajamas watching us, yes. Who couldn't get here, yes, okay.
I had attended a weekend on death and dying at a Buddhist temple in Seattle,
mm-hmm.
and I was profoundly moved with a focus on death. So like a lot of us, it's something that I avoid thinking about.
Mm-hmm.
So to push myself towards it reminded me to try to live beautifully, and it reminded me, it put things in perspective for me, and the people that I met, there were very many hospice people, and I just had so much respect for the folks that I met.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm here because of that experience, and I want it to remind me to live very well.
Okay. Okay. Anyone else? I'm writing down avoid. Thank you. We avoid thinking about it, and it puts things in perspective. Yeah, Susie. Oh, okay. I'm sorry. Yeah. Mm-hmm. What's your name?
My name is Lisa.
Lisa, okay.
And my mom has stage 4 cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And will likely be dying.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm interested in helping us, you know, have a peaceful approach to that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Helping peaceful approach. Okay. So helping others and then having a peaceful approach both for yourself and for your mother, right? Yeah. Okay. Yeah, Susie.
Knowing what to tell my family that I would like to have done.
Okay. Yes. Our own death, yeah. Yeah. What? What do we want? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
My name's Kim, and I've been
thinking about this for a while, and I want to do this, which is going to be my little death kit, and I would like to have it finished, hopefully before the end of the year. And mostly, we had a woman who has passed away, who was part of the committee who helped found this site.
Mm.
She came to one of our workshops on death a while ago.
Mm-hmm.
Said, you know, my dad, when he died, gave us the best gift he could ever give. It was a notebook.
Mm-hmm.
And us kids, all we had to do was go to the notebook. Everything we could possibly want to know about his finances, how he wanted his death, his body to be disposed of, you know, what to do with his personal possessions. I mean, everything that they could possibly need to know was in one place.
Mm-hmm.
And when I heard that, and she said it was because they could grieve.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't have to. So,
yeah.
Ergo, my death kit, and I'm hoping to get it finished by the end of the year.
Okay. Can you tell us a little bit more about the death kit? Yeah.
Well, the death kit is empty right now.
Everything is empty in Buddhism.
Yeah,
yeah.
Thank you.
Uh-huh.
So, I guess I'm finished.
Yeah, right.
No, I wanted to have all of the, you know, everything that I want to dispose of that
mm-hmm.
I have left
yeah.
after I finish disposing of it while I'm alive.
Yeah.
If there's anything left. You know, what to do with it, what to do with my body. Get the forms from here, which
mm-hmm.
I hope is another thing that I hope we talk about is the forms that are available here as to what we want
mm-hmm.
for our death, you know, like rituals here. Have that in there. And maybe, you know, some of the things that, you know, just messages perhaps that I have to certain people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's so far, and I haven't, that's as far as, you know, as I've gotten.
Okay.
Big ones.
Yeah, great. Okay. Yeah. Let's see, can I just cut back to Venerable Chukyi? Could you tell us a little bit about the forms, yeah, for people who are not familiar with those? Yeah.
Yeah, so we'll have, I think it's 3 sessions on what I'm calling the fine print and the paperwork. So we're going to have an attorney here to help us. We're going to actually do wills for people who want to do wills. We're going to do living wills, power of attorney. And then we'll also have the Dharma will, which includes all the things about practices you want done for you, what practices you do that people can do on your behalf if you're incapable of doing them, you know, all that kind of stuff. So we're going to cover all of those in great detail. Yeah.
Okay, thank you. So let's see, back over here.
Maybe someone else.
Okay, we'll come back to you. Okay. Okay, Heidi.
Heidi, yes.
Excuse me. I'm sorry, Heidi.
Okay. I guess what I want is you know, all of those things, but more, this past year has been a year of loss for me.
Mm-hmm.
I've lost friends, I've lost pets, I've lost mm-hmm. family members. And I just really want an emotional perspective on it
mm-hmm.
and how to deal with it. And then looking forward to my own death and how to prepare, you know, my loved ones for that and how to prepare me for future losses
mm-hmm.
because I know they're coming.
So are you saying you want some advice on the grieving process that you've gone through?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. How to work with that?
And,
yeah.
And if there's ways that you can, you know, like help your relatives when, you know, you're passing.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Okay. Okay, helping others while one is dying, yeah. It's incredible. Yeah, certainly with my friends getting sick, I've been going through this incredible grieving process already. You know, they may be here for a couple of years, but, I mean, it's tough, yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah.
My name is Louise, and I'm here because I really want to learn how to live. I think it goes with numbers 1 and 2. If I really understand the immediacy of my death, that it could actually happen at any moment, which
mm-hmm.
intellectually I do, but really
yeah.
I don't.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
I think that I would really suck the essence out of life and really be a stronger, better practitioner.
Okay. So I'm going to put how to live with an awareness of death. Yeah, not just an intellectual knowledge of it. Okay. Thank you. Yeah, anyone else? Oops. Okay, give it a try.
My name is Carol, and I am crying with joy by this class. It is something I have been wanting and talking to friends about for a number of years. So I am just overjoyed. For me, this topic is one of the richest, multi-layered, faceted aspects of living and dying that I know of. I have dealt directly with death and the process of dying since I was a young child, when the second oldest grandchild passed away at the age of 6 weeks. And I was 6 years old at that time, and remember standing beside the casket when those were the times when, you know, the interment, the body was still brought to the home, and reaching in and touching him. And, you know, that was, so I feel like since then I have had, I feel like the privilege of sitting with a number of people, both professionally and in my family, through the dying process. And then when I began studying Buddhism, I was at Koppan at one of the courses there, and we were we meditated for several days on the whole process of dying.
And I
just felt that that was one of the greatest gifts I could have ever received, is really understanding what was happening and what to really be with that in not only a dying state but also waking state.
And so I
want to have people that hopefully maybe are interested in joining together in doing this meditation. And then the inspiration I've received from His Holiness, who, as I understand from one of the lectures I heard or teachings I heard, he does this meditation every day.
He does it 4 or 5 times a day.
Yes,
so
least.
Important, he thinks.
Yes, exactly. So the inspiration from that. So my main motivation, I think, for being here is I really want to die well and happily and with the fullest amount of awareness and consciousness as I possibly can. And engage with friends and family around me. Hopefully, I'll have that privilege and option. Never knows. So that's so I'm just so grateful.
Yeah. That will be part of this series. We won't get into it today, but the meditation on what happens at the time of death is very important meditation.
Yes.
Holiness is all he's got going on in his life. He thinks that's important enough that it's said that he does that meditation 4 or 5 times a day.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you.
Anyone else? Yeah, we got over here.
Everything is pretty much covered there. There's just one other aspect, and it's actually the aspect of forgiveness within this process. I think our relationships with people, or I know me personally, there's still that level. And as I understand, there's, I don't know about a Buddhist philosophy, I hear about stages of grief,
mm-hmm.
where one of them is anger.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's that getting through that step
mm-hmm.
is really important for me to try to understand and work through and how to deal with that.
Okay. Let me go a little bit farther with that because I think that's a really important issue. What, if you're willing to share with us, what is forgiveness for you? Because that's a term that is, it's not a technical Buddhist term, mm-hmm. but you brought up anger. And we talk about anger a lot in Buddhism, letting go of it. What do you mean by forgiveness? If you can elaborate on that for us.
A relationship
mm-hmm.
with my dying father
mm-hmm.
and trying to help him through the process and being able to communicate with him when there's some underlying
yeah. mm-hmm.
relationships between him
right.
and I, and a lot of it's cultural.
Mm-hmm.
Things like that, and, okay. and also, I mean, dying to me, also, I think, as part, you know, someone says how to live.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I also, as far as you know, this is literally the end, but I think there are attitudes that need to die or behaviors within your own lifetime. So you
mm-hmm.
know, maybe I'm taking this too far, but you know, again, it's just really how to. Deal with
mm-hmm. yeah. yeah
communicating that
yeah okay let's go here and then over yeah did you want to follow up on what she said
no I'm not if someone
yeah
I'm not following up.
Let's go over back to Carol she'll follow up and then we'll get back to everybody okay this is a good discussion
I have come to understand forgiveness for myself as the willingness using one's will and choice and consciousness to hold another in their essential, will you call it Buddha nature, divine nature, essential nature of innocence, and to develop that capacity
mm-hmm.
To do that.
Mm-hmm.
And which to me means in their impermanence.
Mm-hmm.
So that all of the external obstructions and are not.
As opposed to focusing on the nasty things they did to you, but
absolutely.
To see the Buddha nature, the potential for Buddhahood that's behind that.
While you may be experiencing the ramifications
yeah.
of all of the
other. Yeah, forgiveness
that.
Is a very interesting subject because it doesn't mean forgetting or
no.
blocking out things. And it doesn't mean that all the bad stuff didn't happen. So what exactly do we mean when we're talking about forgiveness is an interesting question. Yeah, not the subject of this course, but maybe we'll get into it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, let's see. Let's go. Sherry, did you want to say something? Yeah, you haven't spoken yet.
I've had this class several times, or similar.
Yeah.
With Venerable Amy Weekend and with Emily,
mm-hmm.
Who definitely taught us impermanence because Emily, dear Emily, is no longer with us. So I think my goal...
Mm-hmm.
is to have no regrets.
Hmm.
And that's a tough one.
yeah.
but I do enjoy, it sounds funny to other people, but I enjoy thinking about death and dying.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it
yeah.
makes me feel good.
Yeah, so tell me a little bit more about no regrets. How do we achieve that?
Hmm.
It seems like you have to be a Buddha to have no regrets, right?
yeah, well, I don't know. For yourself, just
mm-hmm.
internally, not to have regrets, to not to think, well, I should have told someone that, or I should have done this, or just to be content with where I am at the time, that I can let go and die peacefully.
Yeah, so that gets back how to live, right?
Yeah,
yeah,
exactly.
Through no regrets, that changes how we live, doesn't it? Yeah. See, that,
So I just wanted to, I think that Sherry's saying being content with where you are at that moment, I think is different than no regret. I mean, it's a positive statement, perhaps of the same thing, but I think it's just underlying that.
Okay. Let's see.
Now that I know this is a year course, I work full time, and during the school year, I often don't have extra time. So I'm realizing that I may only get to join you just through July and August.
Mm.
Wondering if I could get a little bit of advice. I'm overwhelmed and I'm wanting to run away after listening to everybody and seeing that.
Mm.
I'm wanting to run away at this exact moment. Now I'm no longer at peace with this. I realize I'm really scared of dying alone, and that comes back to life.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very alone right now. And I'm scared that that's going to continue. I mean, scared to the point where I actually wanted to get up and run away and leave, as all of you were talking. If there's any advice on being able to breathe through this and
so,
shut down.
I'm just going to put down here, fear of dying. Nobody else has
all
brought
of you
that.
I'm so open to this that I realize that I'm not there.
I was thinking about fear myself, and I thought, well, maybe this is too elementary to bring up.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
It's not just fear of dying. I think it's fear of others dying. Like you've lost all these people that you care about, and you know when it's going to happen, when you have somebody that's sick in your life that you really care about.
Yeah.
And I think there's a fear associated with that.
I agree. Yeah, so fear of dying, self and others. Anybody want to address how you deal with that fear, just right, so we don't kind of leave that hanging?
But just maybe fear of losing others. Fear of living, fear of being alone, fear of being deprived of the people that really care about you, maybe.
Yeah, let's go to Suzanne. And then we'll get to Kim. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I guess back in 1994, I had a grandmother die, and it was not unexpected, but it just threw me for such a loop. It just floored me. I was like, wow, I couldn't believe it actually happened. But what the comment I wanted to make now was that I think the thing that brought me to Buddhism is that the grief that I knew I was feeling was so fearful to me that I really was afraid that if I let myself feel the full aspect of my grief, I was fearful that it would destroy me in different ways or in some way. And so back in 1995, when I found this center and started learning about Buddhism and learning to meditate, a good part of most of my motivation for joining the center was this fear that I would be annihilated by my grief. And so for me, the fear of just the grief, the amount, you know, just how much it hurt. I'm not sure where I'm going with this other than
I can relate to people who are feeling fearful about what people are saying. But having learned how to simply meditate and breathe, just even the simplest breathing meditations, allowed me to, over a period of a year or so, allowed me to kind of like inch my way into feeling the grief. And I'll never forget the day when I was meditating, when I feel like I fully opened that door to the grief. And I believe that it was the meditation, the ability to focus on my breath, that allowed me to really get into the grief. And at that point I realized the meditation was helping me feel the grief without it destroying me. Does that make any sense?
Yeah.
So I think fear has a lot of different faces, whether it's fear of dying alone or fear of dying with regrets, fear of having other people leave you, fear of losing your pet, fear of feeling how awful it's going to really feel. So I think fear really encapsulates it all for me. You know, like the death kit is addressing a fear of leaving loose ends. You know, so I think almost everything, for me, everything we could, that's up there on the board, really, I can bring back to the concept of being fearful in one way or the other.
Yeah, thank you, Suzanne. Let's go to Kim and then Susie.
Yeah, I was just, I don't remember your name.
Elaine.
You know, I think any time you get close to a really big emotion, which is what Suzanne was talking about, and sounds like that's what's happening right now, the boat begins to rock really, really strongly. And it's pretty scary to be on that deck, you know, because you're going to feel like you're going to fall off into an ocean of, you know, it's going to kill you. You can't, because you can't survive in there. You know, how, yeah.
The thought of death and dying alone made me realize I'm alone.
Exactly.
Right now.
Right, right,
it's right,
right, right.
It's present.
Right, sure, exactly. And what I was going
to
say is that, you know, I think it's really important to respect the fact that you wanted to run out the door. You know, that's important, and respect that, because it's telling you that this is a big, big fear, and that's right, really important information, right? That's information above everything else. That's information. I am really scared of this. This really scares the poop out of me. You know, that's really important information to know, to have. And from a Buddhist standpoint, I think everybody here is like going through some of these fears. And I think it's really important to know that we're in this bowl. Everybody here is dealing with a fear. And everybody here has got a ship that's rocking. But if we can just find one thing to stow on that onboard ship, one thing at a time, I have my little death kit, right? I'm going to stow some things in there. Something practical that you can do tonight, you know, when you get home, something practical that will address this helps to make the boat rock a little less. But, you know, give it its due, the fact that you want to run out of here. You didn't do it, but, I mean, it's important to realize how big the fear is, because we don't recognize it most of the time. This is why we don't want to talk about it, because it's too scary, right? We are.
Let's see, Susie, and yeah, I know everybody wants to talk.
This is not meant to say that I do this differently than you or to trivialize anything. What helped me face that, because you asked for help, was to study Buddhism. So impermanence, reincarnation, emptiness, these things all help me deal with death of myself and others. I don't know that I'll be perfect, and I have dealt with death of close people. It calms me.
Well, I'm a nurse, and I've watched many people die and babies die and everything. But, you know, there's still this thing in my head that goes, geez, I wonder what that feels like to draw your last breath. And that's scary. I mean, to know that that's it and, you know, what happens next.
That's a mentioned, with it. Anyone else? Donald Chickie.
I really appreciate this discussion. It's really wonderful. Thanks, everybody. And I just want to say that the next session is actually going to be Geshe-la leading us in this death meditation. And so, you know, that might be, for some people it's very disturbing, and for others it's very comforting. Of course, it depends on what you're bringing to it, but it might, you know, just throw that out there. It's Elaine, is that right? As something that might be of help, you know, is to actually go through that. And then, you know, you're facing it in a way that's much more controlled, of course, than when we're actually dying, you know. So. And just to hit on some of these other points, really almost everything that was mentioned, I think we've got a very clear class planned for. So just take a look at the schedule. If there's, you know, if you're not in for all of them, but there's something in particular you're interested in, I think you'll see that almost all these things are covered on one of the sessions. So just want to encourage people to keep coming back if you can.
Are you going to put the particulars on the calendar of what's going to be covered?
So it's already there in terms of the topic, a general topic, like a statement like helping others die, things like that. And so, and if you've got any questions, you can always email me too. If you, you know, have a particular topic that you want to know when it will be covered, I can let you know. Yes.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else want to speak? Jill, did you want to say something? I saw your hand. No? Okay. I thought you looked poised. What do you want from these courses? Oh, you looked.
Well then.
You don't have to speak. I just thought you looked like you had something to say.
I was thinking that was the question. I was trying to catch on. I think that, I guess I'm here to deepen the practice, because every time we've done it in DB with Amy Miller, I didn't catch Emily's, but it has just, the happiness quotient has risen strangely, exponentially. So, and then it makes me feel a little guilty to be happy about it. Which is an odd emotion. It feels funny to feel like that way, but it really does help the practice a lot. And so I've told a few people, it doesn't scare me as much, but that is probably because Venerable Tendrin said I'm not quite facing it, and I'm willing to look at that. But one time when I was at a doctor's office, there was just a regular, the 50-year bone density test, and they told me, you have a little osteopenia in the neck, and I said, okay, you know, what's that? And then I go back to the doctor's office, and I'm waiting for him, and I was just sitting there, and I thought, osteopenia. Oh, my God, I'm going to die. Uh-oh. And it just, like, finally hit me. And not that was going to probably kill me, but it's just like, oh, this is what it looks like, and it's going to just be piece by piece, unless it's a train or something.
Yeah.
So that was really, I was so excited to feel scared to death. Does that help, Elaine?
Yeah.
I was really happy to go, like, finally, I'm like, I am going to die. And that's important, because if I don't get there, then I won't take the benefit of why we're doing this. So if I wasn't scared, then I would be out doing, having a lot of fun in the sunshine right now. But instead, you're here.
The overwhelming part was that it was, oh my God, I'm going to die alone, and I went, oh my God, I am alone. The thought of death made me realize that I'm really not at peace with my life.
Yeah.
That's the thing about meditation on death for a lot of us.
Mm-hmm.
it's like, wait, I'm going to die alone. Oh, because I am alone, because I'm not living well right now means I've projected out that I'm not going to die well.
Yeah.
And it just hit me. It just went boom. Yeah. I didn't want to listen to any of you anymore. I didn't want to look at that board.
Yeah.
I don't want to acknowledge where I'm sitting right now.
You can't make a change until you get there.
So I'm still sitting here. I'm still sitting here, and I'm listening to a room full of incredibly, incredibly wise people. And I'm still here.
I mean, that's part of the meditation on the death process. It's made very clear to us that we go through the process by ourselves. Nobody gets. We don't get to take anybody along with us, no matter how close we feel to them, you know, how connected we are with them. It is something that we do on our own, which is why we need to practice it. So the fact that you're aware of that, starting to become aware of that, maybe in a fearful way, but you know, it's something we need to acknowledge and get comfortable with. You're not going to take anyone with you, yeah, hopefully.
And I'm going to be respectful of everybody's time. I think I'd like to say one more thing and then move on, because there's many, many people in here who came in for reasons, and I want to be aware of not monopolizing the afternoon. Just one more thing. I've been reading Thich Nhat Hanh's book on loving and what you shared about being alone. And when you get these negative, horrible things come up, he mentioned about their seeds. And if something comes up, if you bring your mindfulness to it, it becomes a little less painful. You've dissipated it a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So as this horrible thing came up, I was thinking of Thich Nhat Hanh and how by actually staying here and letting it go, I'm believing that it's going to dissipate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And with that, let's move on and let other people.
Yeah. Anyone else want to speak? Okay. Let's see. Did you write this down, Venerable Choky? You got all this? Okay, so I can erase this. Yeah. So I think everything, great, great, great discussion. Thank you, everyone. I think all these will be addressed during this course. And let's just do another meditation, okay? Yeah, we kind of, yeah, there's a lot going on. So we'll just sit quietly for a few more minutes. Okay, begin by checking your posture. Three deep breaths from the abdomen. And set your motivation. And having set your motivation, we'll just go back to the breath. As was mentioned in the discussion, just paying attention to the breath, that simple process in and of itself, can be incredibly valuable and help us in dealing with the issues that we brought up. Forgetting about what we've done, about what's going to happen, but coming back just to the moment. The breath, nothing more, nothing less than that. Just paying attention to the breath. Every time something else comes up, we set it aside and come back to the breath. So we'll just do that for a few minutes. And you can do a brief dedication to finish your meditation. Okay. Just a couple mention of sources that I've used recently, none of which are required for this course, but if you want to do further reading, always Liberation in the Palm of Your Hand. This is kind of the Boy Scouts Guide to Tibetan Buddhism. It was written by Pabongka Rinpoche, some teachings he gave not hundreds of years ago. I was just thinking about this today. He gave these teachings in the 1930s. And, you know, we have lamas who come who knew him. But this is a classic outline of the Buddhist path. It's not the most, it's a little bit dry for reading, but it's a great reference book if you want to go back and get the points. Liberation in the Palm of Your Hand can't be too highly recommended. Hard Advice for Death and Dying by Lama Zopa Rinpoche, our spiritual guide here. This is one of his books. It's very Lama Zopa, which means it's completely idiosyncratic, okay? But it's a good resource. And then Life, Death, and After Death, which is published by Lama Yeshe Wisdom Archive, has some good topics in it. But there are plenty of books on death and dying. A lot of people look to the Tibetan Book of the Dead, which actually I've never read. It's gotten a lot of publicity in the West, but it's not considered a central text by the Tibetan Buddhists. It just happened to become very famous for a while. So I'm not putting it down, but it's not the key text that sometimes we think. So, I appreciate everybody's contribution to the discussion. I'm not going to address any of those issues today. I'll defer on all of them. I did want to take a little bit of time and just put the discussion of death and dying into the bigger perspective of Tibetan Buddhism as we study it here at Kadampa Center. And you can, if this doesn't interest you, you can space out or walk out or anything, but just do a little bit of review on the Tibetan Buddhist view of death and dying. So say we're all good Tibetan Buddhist. What's our goal in life? Benefit others, but even beyond that, achieve in life. Yeah, but I'd say if we're a good Tibetan Buddhist, yeah. Most of us just want to be happy to get through Monday morning at work, yeah, you know. But theoretically, we all want to become enlightened, okay, to achieve a state of enlightenment, like the historical figure of the Buddha did, which is something that any living being can do, not just a human being. Our dog can get enlightened, an ant can get enlightened. It's maybe more difficult for them, but it's a possibility for anything that has a mind, a consciousness, to achieve enlightenment. So what is enlightenment? You've left all negativities, and what do you replace it with? Compassion and, yeah, yeah. So we eliminate all our negative mind states and fully realize compassion and wisdom. Like I always say, we have to be nice and we have to be smart. We can't just be one or the other. We have to be nice and smart at the same time. Okay, compassion being, yeah, yeah, the wish that others be free of suffering, okay? We can't, even a Buddha can't eliminate the suffering of others, otherwise he would have taken away all our suffering, but he certainly wants us to be free of suffering, okay? So compassion is the wish that others be free of suffering, okay? And what's wisdom? Realization of emptiness, or put it in less, that's correct, but less jargony terms. Yeah, seeing things the way they really are. Seeing reality without any conceptions, okay? So we want to develop compassion and wisdom. Those are the two things we have to do if we want to become enlightened, if we want to become a Buddha, which is a possibility for all of us. So the Buddha gave, like I said, the Buddha couldn't take away our suffering. He couldn't make us wise. All he could do was teach. And so that's what a Buddha can do. He can teach. He can show us. He can't do it for us. So he taught, and he taught all these teachings during his life as a human being about how to develop compassion and wisdom. And they got written down, and then they got confused, and they got mistranslated. And anyway, this guy named Lama Tsongkhapa in Tibet came up with this way of organizing his teachings, took the teachings of the Buddha and kind of put an outline to them, and he called that the Lam Rim, which is what we come back to over and over again here at Kadampa Center. When did Lama Tsongkhapa live? Thank you. Okay. 1357 was his birth date in Tibet. He organized the teachings of the Buddha into a structure called the Lam Rim, which means the graduated path to enlightenment. Graduated, and I used to think it was the gradual path to enlightenment. It's definitely the gradual path to enlightenment for most of us, but graduated in terms of a series of steps, okay? The very gradual path to enlightenment. So he took the teachings of the Buddha and put them into a series of steps, okay? And he divided the Lam Rim up into three sections, or three scopes, as they're called. What are the three scopes? Very subtle way he divided them. Yeah, the small scope.
Small, medium.
Exactly, yeah. Medium scope. And the greater scope. Theoretically, the greater scope is the more difficult to study, but as students of Tibetan Buddhism, we're working on all of them at the same time. Okay, three divisions, small, medium, and large, kind of like Goldilocks or something, too hot, too cold, or whatever. So the first two scopes, the small scope and the medium scope, are basically about developing wisdom, okay? And they don't come out and say this, but they say that wisdom is probably a little bit easier to develop than compassion. Compassion for people we dislike, for example, can be really tough. Seeing reality is a little bit easier. The small and medium scope are developing wisdom. When you've developed wisdom, when you see things as they are, when you realize emptiness, what do you call it? What are you then? If you've mastered that, anybody know that term? You're an arhat, yeah. Okay. And what's the life of an arhat like? No, you have no, you're free of suffering. So what's that state called? Nirvana, okay? I'm just putting out this because these are terms you hear a lot. And we don't talk about nirvana a lot here at Kadampa Center. But if you realize, see things the way they are, it's a state of nirvana, okay? It's the end of personal suffering, okay? Wisdom, end of personal suffering. Nirvana, according to the Theravada Buddhists, it's a state of non-existence. But according to the Tibetan path, you know, there's something beyond that. You need to develop compassion. So the greater scope is developing compassion. What's someone who's very nice but dumb called? Someone who realizes compassion without having realized wisdom. Well, what's that state called of having developed compassion? Bodhicitta, yeah, and you're a bodhisattva, yeah. I mean, the bodhicitta is the state of having developed the compassion side, and someone who's developed that as a bodhisattva. Okay. I know, I was exaggerating, but they haven't realized the wisdom stage, okay? Yeah. So you have an arhat who's realized the wisdom stage, a bodhisattva who's realized the compassion stage. Both kind of Buddhas in training. They're almost there, okay? Because you really cannot purely develop compassion without developing wisdom. You can't see reality without starting to feel compassion for others. You know, wisdom is seeing your own suffering, so automatically it leads to the state of seeing the suffering of others. From the Tibetan point of view, the state of nirvana is a very unstable state. You can't stay there because you're sooner or later, even though you're blissed out, you have no personal suffering, you got to be aware of the suffering of others and you want to do something about it. Okay? So that's the Buddhist path in an overview. So, if we're going to go through these in order, we'll start with the small scope, the wisdom trainings. What's the first thing we talk about in the small scope? But sometimes we don't talk about it. Anybody want to take a stab at that? No. What's the first topic? What's the first step? Yeah, having a teacher, okay, guru, having a qualified guru, okay, or teacher, yeah. And I think even Venerable Chodron said this while she's here. Lots of times she likes to leave that to the very end because it's a very tricky sort of subject. But in the classical teachings, you start off by realizing how important having a teacher is, okay? What's the next topic that you study? Take a stab, just guess. Yeah. Yes, very good. PHR. Precious Human Rebirth, okay? You, how, being born as a human being with a mind that can study the teachings, with a body that's fairly functional, how rare that is, and how valuable it is, and how incredibly wasteful it would be. Or how terrible it would be to waste that. Okay? Yeah. Probably not, no. I'm just giving you the big outline, okay? But, the, yeah, well, I'll touch on it at the end, okay? Okay. So, PHR, and how do we meditate? What are the ways that we convince ourselves of our PHR, or What supports meditation on PHR? Yes, thinking about death. And death is always accompanied by another word. What is it? Impermanence, yes. So we think about death and impermanence to get a better sense of our PHR. And then the other thing we think about, which we will not touch in this. No, before that we get to the suffering of the lower realms. The lower realms. If we take the Buddhist point of view, we know that there are many places we could have been born besides in the human realm. We could have been born in the animal realms or what are referred to as the hungry ghost realms that we're not aware of, but they see where suffering is even more obvious than it is here as a human realm. Certainly in the human realm we get enough suffering, but we have the ability to use that in a positive way. So if we meditate on death and impermanence and suffering of the lower realms, we get a better sense of our PHR, and then we start to talk about karma, cause and effect. Okay? So that's just putting it in the scope. Then in the medium scope, we talk about basically the suffering of the other realms, how all the realms are really suffering. So that gives us wisdom. And then in the greater... And wisdom means... leads to the wish to get out of this cycle of samsara, saying, I don't want any more of this. I'm sick and tired of being sick and tired. I want out. And then the greater scope is the development of compassion. But that's where, in the classical Buddhist tradition, meditating on death and impermanence comes quite early in our spiritual progress and is used not to get us depressed or bummed out or anything, but really to convince us how precious this opportunity we have as a human being. What is impermanence? What does impermanence mean? That's a jargony Buddhist term we use a lot. Everything is changing, okay? And death is really just an example of that. It's not even a separate topic. The big point is impermanence. Everything is changing. And death is just a kind of visible change. Most of the change we don't see. But everything is changing. You know, these chairs are changing. These cushions are changing. You know, the mountains of North Carolina are changing. Our mind is changing. Our emotions, our concepts of who I think I am are changing. Nothing is permanent. And a lot of our problems, according to the Buddhist point of view, come through thinking things. I mean, that's why it's so painful for me to see my two friends dying at age 59. Because certainly I intellectually knew that they were going to die, but I certainly didn't expect it to happen right now. You know, that is my unwillingness. I mean, the pain I'm experiencing, you know, not them out there, but is, you know, my unwillingness to accept that they are impermanent. You know, I thought they would be my friends forever at some sub-intellectual level. So it's this resistance, this inability to accept the impermanence of all phenomena, as Jill said, all caused phenomena, which means everything that's a result of karma. Things come into existence, they exist, and they go out of existence. That's impermanence, and it applies to almost everything. There are a couple things that are permanent. Anybody know what exists? What is there that's permanent? Anybody? This is an intellectual exercise. Yeah, one is space. The space in between objects is permanent. No, Buddha nature is changing. It continues, but it changes. Okay. So we're talking about things that are unchanging. What exists that is unchanging? No, our ideas are always changing. Yeah. Yeah. Well, space is one. Okay, is unchanging. The cessation, the end of a negative mind state. If we completely eliminate, for example, anger from our mind, that is a permanent condition. The end of anger, that is not changing. Okay, the end of a negative mind state. The third one is emptiness. The emptiness of a phenomena is unchanging. And there's one other, but can you remember what it is, Patrick? I think there are usually four. But yeah, I think so. Okay, yeah. Thank you, okay. But for practical purposes, everything is changing, is impermanent, okay? Impermanent doesn't mean it ends. For example, our consciousness is without beginning, without end, over countless lives, but it is impermanent and that is changing. That's something people get a little bit confused about. Impermanence, when we use it here, means changing. It doesn't mean that it ends or begins. It means it's changing. Okay? So, let's see. And our inability to see the impermanence of all phenomena, of friends, family, emotions, is one of the more obvious sources of our suffering. Okay, impermanence is not the same thing as emptiness, but for people who have taken that course, yeah, I'm not going to get into emptiness, but if you start to think about impermanence, it leads to an understanding of emptiness. So an inability to see the impermanence of things is a gross cause of all our suffering, because if we think things are permanent, we cling to them, okay? That the happiness that this person gives me is going to exist forever, of course I cling to it, and I'm unhappy when that person doesn't make me happy. So that's a gross cause of our happiness. Okay. Unhappiness, thank you. Yes. Okay. So what is death? Anybody people want to find death, what we're talking about here? Yeah, okay. That's the Buddhist point of view. Anybody want to give us another definition, or is everybody willing to accept that? The mind, the separation of the mind and body.
I guess most people in the room know what the
Buddha believes,
where it goes from.
Okay, okay. Okay, the Buddhist point of view, death is nothing more than the separation of the mind and the body. When we talk about mind, we're talking about consciousness, awareness, perception, that completely non-physical aspect of ourself, not the brain, though it's dependent upon the brain, but it's the part of us that is aware. And from the Buddhist point of view, that consciousness is without beginning and without end. There's no beginning, there's no end. It's completely non-physical. Its function is to perceive. And so we have this consciousness that's just going on through time, which is when we get to the really advanced stages of Kala Chakra, we realize that's just a concept. So we're just dealing in concepts that aren't really completely valid now, but help us understand them. There's a consciousness that comes together with a body. From the Buddhist point of view, that begins when the egg and the sperm meet. They're very specific about that. The consciousness and the body are united for a certain period of time. The body falls away, decays, and the consciousness continues on. Hooks up with another body, maybe an ant in the next lifetime, maybe in the God realm in the next lifetime. But the consciousness continues. Yeah, this is what's called the bardo, the in-between phase, where the consciousness and the body separate, the body decays, the mind continues on for a certain amount of time before it hooks up the body. What's the cause of the body and mind coming together? Karma, okay? Past actions of body, speech, and mind determine what body our consciousness is going to hook up with. The fact that we have a consciousness now with a human body is the result of past karma. Past good karma, in that a human body is a very favorable rebirth to have if we want to develop spiritually. Okay? Death, according to the Buddhist point of view, death means nothing more than that that karma is used up. We don't have karma specifically to die, but we've used up all the karma that keeps that body and that consciousness united. When that karma is worn out, used up, they separate. The body decays. The body is very impermanent. Okay, the consciousness is impermanent and it's always changing, but it continues on. And then, according to karma, hooks up with the next body, and there's another lifespan. So death is simply the separation of the body and the consciousness based on the karma being used up to keep them together. Questions, comments? So that leads to the meditation on the death process, which Geshe Gelug will be doing next week, which we discussed as a powerful meditation that is based on experiencing in meditation, pretending that you're going through the separation of the consciousness from the body. And it's going through the stages of that, because that's not necessarily an easy process. And His Holiness considers it important enough that he does that meditation 4 times a day. And he considers it that important because your experience of the bardo, the in-between space, is affected to a large degree by the state of your mind at the time of death. And if you go into the bardo stage, again, these are the Buddhist teachings, agitated, fearful, regretful, and when you get in the bardo experience, those emotions take control and latch on to the next life, okay? If you said that the great meditators go into that experience like they're driving the car, they're completely controlling it. And they say going for a great meditator who has mastered his mind, knows what that has prepared this meditation, it's like changing clothes. It's like saying, it's like picking out your wardrobe, what you want to wear. They choose which body and which life, what rebirth they want. I mean, it's like looking in your closet saying, I think that'll look good on me today, or I think that'll look good on me today. Or they say, I'll wear that because that'll make Patrick happy if he sees me wearing that shirt or something like that. They choose their next life for the benefit of others. So we want to avoid going into that fearful, unprepared, regretful. I mean, that's, yeah, so at that moment we can just be, say, I'm going through this for the benefit of myself and for others. That's why the moment of death is so important and why we want to prepare for that. And the only way we can prepare for the moment of death is to live our lives in a way that, you know, gives us a calm mind now. We can't, you know, live our lives with an agitated, angry, resentful mind and say, oh yeah, I'm going to be peaceful at the moment of death. So in some way, all we're doing is preparing for the moment of death so we can have a favorable rebirth. If nothing else, so that we don't have a lower rebirth where we suffer, but as much as possible, choose a rebirth that will benefit others. Okay. Questions? Comments?
Tell me if this isn't something you want to touch, but there was a post today on Facebook by Venerable Steve.
Mm-hmm.
There was a monk that died in 1927, and he's still fresh. So, you know, not to discuss that.
Yeah.
So, but just think about the death process. So he said he was going to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So that, you know, that makes sense to me because mm-hmm. he's gone through this process. So is his consciousness still there to make it?
Yeah. There are these stories of Tibet great meditators being physically dead, and the body doesn't decay for a week or 2 weeks, or this one, 1927. I had not heard that one. That means the consciousness is still in the body. They're very far into the death process, and Geshe-la will talk about these stages next week, but the consciousness has left the body. I mean, it's impossible for the body to stay, to live without, once the consciousness is gone, the body just completely falls. So you can talk about it at Kadampa Center? Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's to demonstrate. Yeah, I mean, it's to teach. Yeah. Yeah, all they can do is teach. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I actually saw that.
Oh, okay.
I saw a monk that had died. I don't know what year, but he was...
What decade?
Yeah, I don't know. I should look. Uh-huh. See if I can figure it out. But he was sitting in this posture,
mm-hmm.
and he was kind of like... dried up, but he was there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He was enclosed in a glass case, so
yeah.
I don't know what to think of it.
Yeah. According to the Buddhist point of view, his consciousness is still there, is not separated. And there are certain signs, and Geshe will talk about this, certain thing, moisture out of your nostrils, and then the Western, there are various signs, but it's what happens in the death process is very much a reverse of what happens in the birth process, and it's based on the white seed from the father, the red seed from the mother coming together, you know, representing sperm and egg coming together. That's when the consciousness joins that body, is when the egg and sperm join together. As you'll see in the meditation next week, it's the reverse. You get down to the level of the white and the red seed, and then they separate. And that's the moment of death. It's just pure. And so if you're a great meditator, it's just pure consciousness, unencumbered by any body or any physical hindrances. So that consciousness, if you know what to do with it, is incredibly powerful. You can just, you know, kind of jump into the next rebirth or do this or do that. But most of us aren't prepared for it. We're not great meditators. Yeah. Any other comments? Okay. Any other thoughts about what death is? Okay. I gave the Buddhist point of view. It's the separation of the consciousness from the body. Anybody have a different idea or... Okay. Let's do another brief meditation and then we'll wind up today. We'll do about 10 minutes of meditation. Again, we're just going to do the concentration on the breath. And that will prepare us very well, I think, for what Geshe-la leads next week, which will be a very elaborate guided meditation. So check your posture. Three deep breaths from the abdomen. And set your motivation. And now place your consciousness, the non-physical aspect of your being, your awareness, on the breath, the physical sensation of the breath moving in and out through the nostrils. Nothing more than that, just paying attention to the breath moving in and out. And now I'd like you to just think for a couple minutes about the advantages of talking and discussing and meditating about death. How will it benefit you and others to come to Kadampa Center on Saturday afternoons and think about this topic? We've already touched on a couple of them. First, it'll prepare us for the time of death, which we know is inevitable. So just getting ready for it will improve the experience. And we've also talked about how being aware of death will change the way that we live this life, give us a greater sense of how valuable our human rebirth is. So think about those two reasons, benefits of meditating on death, and any others that come up. Why do we want to do this? How will it benefit me and others? And you can end your meditation with a brief dedication. Did anyone come up with any good reasons to think about the subject that we hadn't touched on? I think that's really important at the beginning, is get clear on why we want to discuss this. And I think everyone's goals were pretty clear on that. Anything else come up for anyone?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. For not using the correct jargon.
Exactly. And that's just it, but... probably, though, is struggling with other people in your lives who are not Buddhists. So,
mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know if you feel that way, but so I want to reword. I think what I'm looking for is letting go.
Mm-hmm. That's a good, so, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I wasn't criticizing for using the word forgiveness, because I think that it's something we've talked about here, and it's hard to put that concept into Buddhist terms sometimes, mm-hmm. but letting go, yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Comment over here.
I just thought of something. I was down visiting my folks recently. They live in Florida. And one of the things that causes my mom terrible anguish is that she really thinks I'm going to hell. And there's got to be a common thing,
mm-hmm,
you know,
yeah,
dealing
mm-hmm.
with. But, you know, I think that's something that causes her a lot of pain, and I feel bad.
Yeah, sure.
Her,
mm-hmm,
you know,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that's
okay.
Something, you know, about
yeah,
death.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's see, Jeff. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, letting go. That's it. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think meaning, giving meaning to life. So I've, you know, had some experience with people who don't want to live,
mm-hmm.
and you know, so to me these seem very, very intertwined. People who have you know, really cannot see a reason to live,
mm-hmm.
and so. It to me, that is connected with the meaning of life.
Yeah.
And I, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Patrick.
I just wanted to say one thing that that I've been thinking about recently and intend to think about is that it's getting a sense that relationships continue past death.
Mm-hmm.
And the spirit and so on, but that, and I think it's related part of what we're talking about in terms of regret or forgiveness and so on, mm-hmm. is really worked on letting go, hopefully, you know, before the time of death,
mm-hmm.
of the negative aspects of a relationship and focusing on the positive aspects,
mm-hmm.
and continue that process after the time of death.
Yeah.
So that my memories and the ideas, mm-hmm. are continually enriched and appreciated.
Yeah.
And that I view that not as something that is as a continuing process rather than something that's sort
mm-hmm.
of,
yeah.
Brought to a screeching halt. So it, you know, where it has to be, everything has to be accomplished, you know, you know, before the deadline.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
Okay. Anyone else? Okay. Well, thank you, everyone. That was a great discussion. Next week, Geshe-la will be leading the death process meditation. Next month, yeah. Yeah, no, we're going to squeeze out. We're going to do it every week. Yeah. It was so good. Yeah, next month. That's a very complicated analytic meditation. Do you know if there's some place they can read about it beforehand? What's a good source for that? It would help if, yeah. Yeah, exactly what goes on. I can't think of a good source. Do you know? Yeah. Yeah, anyway, maybe we'll find one, but just because it's so complicated, it wouldn't be bad to be familiar with it before you come. I mean, Geshe-la will not get everyone's interpretation of it is a little bit different, but yeah. Yeah. And maybe, yeah, I've never taught that module, so I don't know. Yeah. Yeah. Have I? I taught Death and Dying? I've blocked it from my memory, yeah.